welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier, and in this hour's sitcoms, we'll hear The Halls of Ivy with Ronald and Benita Coleman later in the hour. Right now, it's The Smiths of Hollywood with comedian Arthur Treacher and announcer and actor Harry Von Zell. From January 24, 1957, a syndicated recording called Counterfeit Money.
From Hollywood, California, we bring you The Smiths of Hollywood. As Bump Smith, age 10, Jan Ford.
Mom! Mom! I hear the garbage man coming.
As Nancy Smith, Brenda Marshall.
Bill, the garbage man, would you empty the garbage in the kitchen?
As Bill Smith, Nancy's husband, Harry Von Zell.
I'm in the bathtub. Uncle Cease, would you dump that garbage in the kitchen?
What a quaint request. But just as you say...
And that was Sir Cecil Smythe, Bill's English uncle, Arthur Treacher. Yes, it's the Smiths of Hollywood. And now meet attorney Bill Smith.
Nancy, darling, I'm in the bathtub. Would you take it?
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is Nancy Smith. And what a day this has been. Brother... It started with breakfast. Bill eats through a hole in his newspaper. And once in a while, doggone it annoys me. Bill, when we were married, didn't you promise to love, honor, and not read the paper at breakfast?
Uh-huh.
I can't even kiss you anymore without Dick Tracy breathing down my neck.
Uh-huh.
Bill, if you don't come out from behind that newspaper, I'm going to set fire to it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you didn't even hear me. All right. I will light a match to it.
Uh-huh.
Bill, I'm really going to.
Uh-huh.
Your newspaper's on fire, darling.
Uh-huh.
I have a big glass of water here. Would you like me to put the fire out, darling?
Uh-huh. Nancy, is something burning?
Uh-huh.
Well, aren't you going to do something about it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, someday I'll marry a woman who can make toast without... Hey, holy smoke, my newspaper. Fire! Fire!
Oh, don't worry, darling. I'll save you.
What is the idea? I'm soaking. Look at me. You little...
Is that any way to talk to someone who just saved your life?
You're a femicidal maniac. First you try burning me at the stake, then drowning. Right.
What's your newspaper got that I haven't got?
Little Abner. And if you must know, Nancy, I was looking through the want ads for a job.
Well, what's wrong with the one you have?
No, a job for Uncle Cecil, Stoop. He's eating us out of house and home.
Oh, now, darling, Cecil's a nice man. And what's one more mouth to feed?
Plenty if it's Uncle Cecil's. I sometimes wonder, is that guy a mouth or is he a man? Hey, mouth or man? What do you think of that?
I think it's louthy.
Good morning, Pater. Good morning, Mater.
Well, listen to Dater. We're being very British, aren't we?
Hearing Uncle C singing in the shower does it. It smells to me like he's using your pet shaving lotion again, Pop.
No, now that is the last straw. Breaks my golf clubs, wrecks my car, drinks my scotch. Wonder when he's going to start wearing my clothes.
Uncle Billy, I've got the beautiful ruby tinted nose. Well, good morning, good morning. How do I look?
Pop, you can stop wondering.
Yes, my new gabardine. That is my favorite suit.
It was it? Excellent taste, William. Is breakfast ready?
Uncle Cecil, before you sit down to breakfast, that is Bill's best suit.
Oh, well, in that case, I'd better have a napkin. Yes. Thank you. I'll tuck it under my chin.
If I were you, I'd tuck it under both chins.
Quiet, Bumps. Hurry now and drink your milk at Bill's strong tea.
I'd rather have him built by the dentist like Uncle C.
Bumps! Bill, can I use the car today?
I was planning to use the car today.
Now, she didn't ask you. Nancy at least knows enough not to drive on the left-hand side of the street.
Our club's having a rummage sale. Is there anything you'd like to get rid of?
No. Well, yes, now that you mention it, I...
William, stop staring at me that way.
Well, we're going to use the money to buy food parcels for Europe.
Yes, well, you better hurry. If Uncle Cecil stays in this country 3 more weeks, Europe will have to start sending food to us.
Well, I've got $75 of the club money now. Now, we want to raise 300 more. That would feed 40 families.
Yes, well, dear, I, for one, will be very glad when your club gets a new treasurer.
Well, that's uncalled for, Bill. I haven't muddled the accounts at all, hardly.
Yes. How about the $5 you couldn't account for last week?
I found it. And I suppose you've never misplaced $5.
Not of anyone else's money. Darling, as your lawyer, well, you can never be too careful when you handle other people's money. Right, Uncle Cecil?
Right. By the by, old boy, could you advance me 10 so I'd have something to be careful with?
Ten. Uncle Cecil, if you get a job, you wouldn't have to bother asking me for money all the time.
Oh, it's no bother, William. I don't mind a bit.
Uncle Cecil doesn't want a job. He's more the banker type.
Yes, but it's sensible hours those fellas keep, 9 to 3.
Oh, Uncle Cecil, there's a lot goes on in a bank after the doors close at 3.
Really? Well, I've always suspected as much.
Say, Bill, how about sending Cecil to see Mr. Upjohn at the First National, huh?
Well, what has Upjohn ever done to me?
No, I'm serious. After all, you are attorney for the First National. And Mr. Upjohn was very grateful to you when you helped him put across the community chest drive.
Well, I know, but what could Uncle Cecil do at a bank?
Maybe they need someone to scrape up chewing gum or fill inkwells.
What a hideous little mind that child has.
I don't know, Bumps. That idea is not as crazy as it sounds. I think I will talk to Upjohn. I'll phone him right now.
Bill, your breakfast is getting cold. Try phoning Mr. Upjohn later.
Nancy, his secretary says she'll have him in a minute. I'll wait.
Bumps, go upstairs and see if you have any old clothes for my rummage sale.
How about my middies? It's time I started being a sweater girl.
Sweater girl? I say, what is a sweater girl?
That's a middy girl who eats her spinach and drinks her milk.
Oh, yes. like Popeye the Sailor, huh?
Oh, grow up, Uncle Cecil. I'll go get the things for you, Mom.
Are you interested in the rummage sale, Uncle Cecil?
Oh, yes, definitely, my girl. Where does it take place?
Say, Uncle Cecil, I just spoke to Mr. Upjohn at the bank, and guess what? You're in.
Really? How do I get out again?
No, I mean everything is Jake.
Jake? Oh, is he in there with me?
Oh.
Bill means that you've got a job. I guess that's what you mean, don't you, Bill?
Yes, if Cecil doesn't talk himself out of it. Mr. Upjohn wants to see you in a half hour.
Does he now? Well, I'll be lolling in the hammock. Send him out, will you?
He wants to see you at the bank. Oh. You can get the bus at the corner.
Or I could drive you later.
No, he hasn't time. Now, here's $1 for bus fare, Uncle Cecil.
$1?
Yes.
Now that I'm a banker? Here's your one. I'll take that 10.
Now, just a second. Give me back that 10.
Confound it, man. I only just borrowed it. Stop hounding me.
Isn't that... That's a fine thing. I get you a job and it costs me money.
Oh, that's high finance for you. Well, cheerio, gungo. I'm off to the money vault. Uncle Jimmy has got a beautiful...
Bill, is there really a job at the bank?
So Mr. Upjohn said. And dear Uncle Cecil ought to be perfect for it. Yes, just perfect for it.
Hey, Mike, where do I cash a check around here?
The first window, my good man.
My good man, he says. From a bank guard yet. What'll I think of next?
A confounded nephew of mine coercing me into menial labor. He told me I was going to be front man. Imagine me, a doorman.
Hi, Uncle Cease. Get that, get up.
Yes, I'm afraid this would happen. What do you want?
Pop said you were a bank director. Just came down to see what a bank director does.
My good man, could you direct me to the president's office?
Now I know.
Shut up. That gate to the left, sir.
You want me to go home and get my camera and take a picture of you?
No, I don't want you to go home and get your camera and take a picture of me. Just go home.
Cheer up, Uncle Smitty. This job might turn out to be more exciting than you think.
Look here. Why don't you go and find yourself a toy or a mate or whatever interests small girls and leave me alone?
Well, here comes a customer. Boy, get a load of that figure.
Yes, it's quite a load of it, isn't there?
Hello, are you in charge around here? I came here to check my billing.
This is a bank, madam. Are you looking for a bank or a weighing scale?
This is the First National Bank, isn't it? I had a letter from you people yesterday saying I was a little short.
Oh, I wouldn't take it personally, madam.
Oh, of all the impudence, I have a notion to have you fired.
Nothing would delight me more, old girl.
Oh, girl! Well, I like that.
Glad you do, old girl. Cheerio. I say you do have some amazing creatures over here in the colonies, don't you?
Where do they keep the money around here?
How should I know? Now, look, child, you make me feel even more conspicuous in this dratted uniform. Now, run and catch a bird or something, will you?
Oh, Mr. Smythe, Sir Cecil, Mr. Upjohn, the president, wants to see you in his office.
Really? Oh, probably wants to raise my salary. Be with him in a jiffy. Mr. Upjohn.
Hello, Sir Cecil. Come in.
Thank you. I say, don't get up, John. Don't get up, John. I say, saw the good in it. Oh, not bad, yes.
You know, sometimes I wish my name was Smith.
Up Smith, up Smith. I don't see the humor to that. Oh. Mind if I take a cigar?
Yes.
Thanks very much.
And how did the first day on the job go?
The question you've just asked me makes the 243rd unnecessary question of the day.
Yes, well, as a matter of fact, that's why I wanted to speak to you. A couple of people said you were curt.
Me, curt? You sure they meant me?
Well, I always say a word to the wise is sufficient. We pride ourselves on being friendly here.
I'm terribly sorry, really, I am. Is that why you sent for me?
Yes. I just thought I'd mention it.
Oh, I thought you might be considering me for a more important position.
But maybe after you've been with us longer.
I suppose this is learning the job from the outside in. I say, is that money on your desk? I thought you kept it in vaults.
What's it? This? Oh, no, this is worthless money.
Worthless? Looks good to me.
Well, it went through many hands before we spotted it here at the bank.
Spotted it, eh? How careless of you. I don't see what a few spots matter.
Eh? Oh, well, you British have a better sense of humor than you get credit for.
Yes.
Oh, excuse me just a moment. Hello, Upjohn speaking.
This is the Cooper Radio Survey. Who's sponsoring the program to which you're listening?
This is a bank, madam.
Oh, the businessman's friend. Well, hang on, I'll connect you with my radio. You mustn't miss this.
Well, thank you. I'll remember. Why is it those radio surveys never ask me if I like what I'm listening to? Oh, you still here, Sir Cecil?
You know, I've been looking at this money. Are you sure it's worthless?
Positive.
What do you do with it?
It goes back to Washington. I suppose they burn it.
Burn it? Of course, in Europe, we always did say you Americans had money to burn, but I never believed it before.
Excuse me, Mr. Upjohn, but there's a man to see you outside.
Oh, yes, excuse me.
Now, about this money, I seem to be talking to myself. That money worthless, I just can't believe it. He's probably only tried it on people who have too much of it anyway. Must be lots of people who aren't so fussy about a little spot here and there. You know, they ought to give it another chance before they burn it.
Oh,
where they keep the money?
Oh, are you still here? I thought I sent you home.
Gee, Wilkins, what a roll of cabbage.
Cabbage?
Greenbacks, fox skins, Missoula.
Are you speaking boogie-woogie?
Uncle Cease, what are you going to do with the money?
Save it from a horrible fate, I hope. Bumps, if your uncle is right, Mr. Upjohn is man enough to admit he's wrong, I should at least wind up as vice president. See you at dinner time.
Another beer here, Mac. Leave off the suds.
Ah, keep your shirt on. What do you want, Bub?
Bub? Who's he?
That's you, Bub.
Well, then, Bub will have a glass of bubbly. Ho, 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 yes. But first, my good man, will you take this money in exchange?
I never turned down no money yet.
Hey, what a roll. You must be a terrific crapshooter.
Crapshooting? Oh, no. Nothing like that. I left my fowling piece in England.
You shouldn't be flashing such a wad around. You look like a banker.
I say you're a discerning chap, aren't you? As a matter of fact, I am in banking. If you ever require the service of a bank...
Me, I don't trust nobody. I keep mine in the old sock. Hey, there was a guy around here a minute ago that could use a bank. Hey, Mac, come here. That's the guy on the end of the bar. He has some checks he wants cashed. Me, I wouldn't cash my own brother's check.
Yes, well, you probably know your brother.
If he wants to cash a check, squeeze a drink out of him.
Really, old boy, I may look like it, but I'm not a juice extractor.
Holy smokes. Where'd you get the wad?
I told you, the guy's a banker.
Hey, no kidding there. Can you cash some checks? I didn't get to the bank in time.
You bet, old boy, if you don't mind this spotted money.
Blood money, huh? What racket's you in? Selling homes to veterans?
Well, money's money to me. How much you got there? Looks like enough to choke a horse.
Well, I haven't tallied it to tell the truth, but a horse would have a hard time swallowing it, wouldn't he?
Well, could you cash a couple of $100 for me?
Well, if you don't object to this money. And I say, if you don't have a regular bank, why not come to the First National? Here's one of our cards. Be sure and say I sent you.
Well, now I've seen everything. Bankers cruising for business like taxi cabs. Here, have one on me.
May I come in, Mr. Upjohn? It's all right, don't get up, John.
I don't intend to. Where did you go?
I'll come to that. I'll, mind if I take one of your cigars, old chap? I think I deserve one.
Did you take those bills off my desk?
Now, before we go into that, I want to talk to you.
As a friend, you understand.
How long have you been on this job?
Here at the bank? 23 years.
Yes. Well, it couldn't be inexperience then, could it? No.
No, probably too close to the job.
Yes, must be it, yes. Mr. Upjohn,
why don't you take a long vacation?
What?
You know that money you showed me?
It was perfectly good.
Oh, Smythe, come to the point.
I got rid of it with no trouble at all.
Got rid of it?
Yes, saved the bank $200.
Oh, Gabriel's teeth. You didn't put that money in circulation.
Yes, I did. Yes. And here, Mr. Upjohn, are the checks I took in exchange. Not a bad day's work, eh?
Oh, Smythe, quickly now. Who did you give the money to?
Oh, some chap I encountered in a pub.
In a pub?
Yes, he was very grateful. I knew it was good money. You know, I really advise a vacation for you.
A vacation? If it gets around our bank is giving out counterfeit bills, I'll get a vacation, all right.
Oh, you deserve it, yes. Counterfeit? Did you say counterfeit?
I said counterfeit.
Ah, yes, I was afraid I heard correctly. Here's your cigar back, Mr. Upjohn.
Smythe, I told you that money was counterfeit.
You didn't tell me it was counterfeit. You said it was worthless.
Worthless money, counterfeit money, what's the difference? Why can't you learn to understand English?
I do, old boy. Worthless money, counterfeit money.
Why
but I
can't you learn to speak English?
Aren't you home awful early?
Well, your mother has the car. I took an early bus to avoid the jam. Uncle Cecil around?
He's working at the bank.
Yes. I hope Mr. Upjohn never holds this against me.
I don't think you need to worry. Uncle Cease was in there pitching. I just left him.
Yeah. How does he look as a doorman?
Swell. But Uncle Smitty is headed for bigger things.
What? I couldn't have misjudged the old fossil, could I? Well, what do you mean, bigger things?
Well, I'm not quite sure, but... Oh, hi, Uncle Cease. I was just telling Pop what a swell doorman you are.
William, I'll never trust you again.
Telling me I was going to be front man at the bank.
Well, you are, aren't you, Uncle Cecil? Say, did you and Upjohn hit it off all right?
Hit it off?
No, almost, but it stopped short of blows.
Yes. What stopped short of blows?
Oh, dear, so soon. William?
William? If that's Upjohn, say I just joined the Foreign Legion.
What are you talking... Wait till I answer this. Hello?
Hello, Bill?
Yes?
Has that blasted uncle of yours told you what's happened?
We just got home. What's the matter?
He gave out over $200 in counterfeit money.
He... No.
Yes.
Why, that's terrible. His bond will cover it, of course.
Oh, that's not the point. The FBI will be in the poor soul's tail and then those bills get in circulation.
Well, listen, you better get hold of the poor guy and explain before he passes out any of that money.
Well, how? Sir Fogbaum never even got his name. All the checks were made out to cash.
Why, that fella could probably bring suit. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? You're our attorney.
Oh, yeah, so I am. Well, hold on. I'll be right down.
There are the checks.
All cash, no endorsements.
Yes, Helen Matthews, Jane Faulkner. Here's one from Ann Sheridan.
Right.
Say, did you call these people and ask them who they gave cash checks to today?
I can't reach them. Ann Sheridan's business manager said she was going to some sort of a charity rummage sale.
What?
That's my only lead so far.
Wait a minute, did you say rummage sale?
Yes, but who's holding a rummage sale?
Rummage sale. Now, isn't it a small world?
What do you mean?
Oh, I mean, be of good faith. Don't worry. Give me the checks and cheer up, John.
Leave it to Sherlock Smith.
Well, home at last. Bring all the fenders with you, Nancy?
Oh, why, Bill, did you come out to open the garage doors for me?
I'll put the car in later. Well, isn't it fashionable to kiss your husband this season?
Oh, it's fashionable for me.
But just let some other woman try kissing my husband. Oh, Bill, I had the most exciting day.
Well, let's hear about it.
People were so nice, we took in over $200 to buy food for overseas. Imagine.
Yeah.
Why, that'll buy food packages for 40 families.
Oh, Dolly, I'm proud of you. Did you deposit the money?
No, I didn't have time. I got it right here in my purse.
Oh,
I guess my purse is in the back seat.
$200, that's quite a haul, darling.
Oh, people can really be so nice.
Bill, see if my purse is in the glove compartment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see it, Nancy.
Oh, you'd have been so proud of my auctioneering, Bill. It isn't in the glove compartment?
Nope.
Well, it must be. Let me look. Bill, something dreadful's happened.
What, dear?
Oh, my purse is gone. With all those checks.
That's tough.
Well, don't just stand there. Do something.
Do what?
Well, something. Bill, what'll I do?
Well, first I'd hire a good lawyer.
Lawyer?
You don't think people are going to believe you just lost $200?
But I did lose it. Bill Smith, don't you think for a minute that
me? Not me, dear, but
of course I'm not a judge.
Bill.
The courts are full of such cases. I lost one like this just last week. Unfortunate woman got a year for embezzlement.
Oh, how horrible.
Yeah.
Well, I'd better start calling people at once.
Oh, no. As your lawyer, I advise against that.
Well, I have to do something.
All right. Now, I advise you to just put your head on my shoulder. That's it. No. No tears. Now, Nancy Smith, I want you to repeat a magic phrase. Say, I'll never be careless with money again. Go ahead, say it.
Oh, I'll never be careless with money again.
That's right.
Oh, Bill, don't be cruel. I didn't mean to do it, honest.
Of course not, darling. And now, reach in my right coat pocket. Mm-hmm. That's it, there.
The checks.
Press those.
All 11 of them. How did you get them?
Nancy, I am a man of many secrets.
You took them. Oh, Bill, the scare you gave
did
me.
I?
You're horrid.
Oh, Nancy, my shin. Don't.
Oh.
Stop it. No.
I say. Oh,
not there.
What's going on out here?
I can't.
Oh, a game of soccer.
Don't, please, Nancy.
Bravo, Nancy. Bravo.
We're both in.
scare Bill gave me about those checks. I thought I'd really lost them, and I was mad enough to scalp Bill. You know, I still can't figure out how he got the checks. Oh, excuse me a moment. Hello?
Mrs. Smith? This is Fred Upjohn at the bank. Say, they nabbed the man that took the checks out of your car.
What?
Mm-hmm. He tried to cash one of the bills at the racetrack. He has quite a record. I suppose Sir Cecil deserves some of the credit. I was a little harsh with him. Is he there? I'd like to apologize.
This is all beyond me, Mr. Upjohn. Just a minute. I'll put Uncle Cecil on. Uncle Cecil, Mr. Upjohn wants to speak to you.
Upjohn, tell him I'm not here. He probably wants to hire me back.
You go and talk to him, you dope. Maybe he's changed his mind.
Well, I haven't. No, William, I don't want to work there anymore.
Listen, Uncle Cecil, he didn't mean all he said.
That's not the point.
But, William, employees frequenting pubs, handing out counterfeit money. I say, is that any way to run a bank?
The Smiths of Hollywood, starring Arthur Treacher, Brenda Marshall, Harry Von Zell, and Jan Ford, is written by Dick Nosselman. Vic Knight directs, Andrew Hickox produces. Tonight's cast also included Sarah Berner, Howard McNear, Jim Doyle, and Tyler McVeigh.
The Smiths of Hollywood, on Tuned to Yesterday, from January 24, 1947, a syndicated recording. Harry Von Zell, one of the stars of the show, also longtime announcer for Eddie Cantor's comedy program. It's an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now the popular Brits living in Hollywood, Ronald and Benita Coleman, team up for the Don Quinn-written series, The Halls of Ivy. He was also the creator of one of radio's biggest comedy shows, Fibber McGee and Molly, and delivers this April 2nd, 1952 broadcast from NBC.
The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College.
And now, the Halls of Ivy.
We love the halls of Ivy that surround us here today.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Reading maketh a full man, said Francis Bacon many years ago. But it's a notorious fact that college presidents get very little time to read. Thus, it's a rare and precious scene that we're permitted to view this evening as we look into the living room at number one faculty row. There by the hearth, enjoying the fire and basking in the warmth of each other's company, sit Dr. William Tonander Hall, president of Ivy, and his wife, Victoria, reading.
I knew it. I just knew it. Couldn't have been anyone else.
Then who?
The mailman. I had him under suspicion right from the first.
Of what exactly are you accusing the mailman?
Of murder, and I knew it from page three.
Page three? Mm. Oh, a fictional mailman. Yes, not that swift courier of ours. Who conquers snow and rain and heat and gloom of night on his appointed rounds to bring us a calendar from the butcher, a testy note from the gas company, or an invitation to donate $500 to a committee for the defense of a parakeet charged with psittacosis.
What was the question again?
I merely said, then you were not talking about our mailman.
Well, maybe that's what you said, but you didn't say it merely. No, it was the mailman in the murder mystery I just finished. He stabbed Sir Montague Milford in the butler's pantry.
Right between the sherry and the biscuits, I presume. How was the book, aside from the fact that the author failed to baffle you?
Terrible. I found it on a seat on an Ivy bus this afternoon. Somebody smarter than I am had thrown it away. What are you reading, or were you reading, before I broke in on your research?
It is called Miscellaneous Publication Number 486, and is published by the Soil Conservation Service of the United States Department of Agriculture.
Hmm. You must have found that on a bus, too.
No, Professor Darby of our agricultural school gave it to me. It is subtitled Teamwork to Save Soil and Increase Production. It's devoted to the conservation of water and soil.
Well, that's simple enough. Just dig a well and save the water in it. Put the dirt you dug out of the well in a big pile and save that too. Conservation, soil and water. Why don't they ask me about these things?
Well, I can't answer that without hurting your feelings, my love. Besides, this is really a large and interesting subject. It concerns proper farming methods, such as contour plowing, tree planting, erosion prevention, and 100 other ways to use the earth and not lose it. Professor Darby calls it farming today for tomorrow.
Well, why did he give it to you?
Oh, I indicated some interest the other day when I asked him about the legal aspects of cloud seeding.
Cloud seeding?
Yes, dear, artificial rainmaking.
But, darling, you are interested in most things. But what about the legal aspects?
Well, I just asked a hypothetical question. I wanted to know what my legal rights would be if I owned a farm, raising crops which required little or no water, while a neighboring farm needed rain and started cloud seeding. Supposing the wind were to shift and my crops were deluged and ruined, whom could I sue? My neighbor? My government? The firm of cloud seeders? Or Jupiter Pluvius?
Well, yes. Or if we started out for a picnic on a bright day and some ambitious farmer sent up an airplane and made it rain, who would we blame for the soggy sandwiches and the wet cookies?
Exactly.
Well, who would we?
Professor Darby didn't know.
No.
It's the old story. Ask a hypothetical question and you get an equivocal answer. So I think I shall lay this pamphlet aside and go back to my real reading for the evening.
A mystery?
Yes, a profound one. It is a paper by one of our younger faculty members in one of the psychological journals. Just published. The mystery is why.
Sounds fascinating. Dibs on it after you've finished. What's the title of this masterpiece?
It's called... Excuse me while I take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
A statistical study of certain aspects of sibling rivalry among public school children and the pre-adolescent age group.
You know, I think we ought to read aloud to each other more often. Seriously, is it any good?
Seriously, no. Vicky, I try to be appropriately humble in fields where I am not an expert, but this paper sounds as if...
What is it, Toddy?
I thought I heard someone on the porch.
Oh, it's that wretched doorbell. The battery's dead or something. No, somebody is at the door, Toddy.
Well, here's a knocking indeed.
Break, Duncan, with thy knocking. I would thou couldst.
I'll get it, Vicky. Anon, anon, I pray you remember the porter. Ah, Macduff. Won't you come in?
Macduff? Why? What? Oh, I see, the knocking. Always your little joke, Dr. Hall. Your doorbell doesn't work.
Good evening, Mr. Wellman.
Macduff, indeed. Duncan is in his grave. Good evening, Mrs. Hall. After the light's fitful fever, he sleeps well.
Yeah, I guess I have you there, Dr. Hall.
Treason has done his worst. Nor steel, nor poison, malice...
That's enough, domestic. Dr. Hall, that's enough.
Oh.
Now, let us put this persiflage aside. I have come here, Dr. Hall, on a matter of the gravest. I am disturbed by a matter which concerns you as president and I... Me, that is, as chairman of the board.
Well, if you're suggesting that it doesn't concern me, Mr. Wellman, I can go hook a rug or something.
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. I didn't mean that. I know Dr. Hall likes to have you present whenever possible.
Yes, I even bought an insurance policy to further the idea. It's called a marriage license.
Anyway, please don't leave, Mrs. Hall. I value a woman's approach to things. Intuition, they call it. Intuition nonsense. Just a pretty name for animal instinct.
Yeah. I know, a euphemism.
Euphemism.
He didn't mean you, he meant me.
Oh.
Yeah, please sit down, Mr. Wellman.
Thank you, Mrs. Hall. As you know, I want to have here at Ivy a faculty second to none. The best, mind you.
Well, I find myself in complete agreement with you, Mr. Wellman. It's a rare and enjoyable sensation.
Well, enjoy it while you can. Because, Dr. Hall, the price of having the best faculty obtainable is internal vigilance.
Eternal, isn't it?
In this case, it's internal, Mrs. Hall. It
oh.
concerns this college as an internal affair. And to further this objective, Dr. Hall, we must be ruthless. Objective. We must... Look, do you know this new man in the history department, Professor Grimes?
Hugh Grimes? Yes, but he's not exactly new, Mr. Wellman. He's been with us a year and a half, and a good man, too.
Now, that is a matter of opinion, and it is not my opinion. The man is no scholar, not keeping up with the standards of our faculty. He's lazy, slacking on his job. He's letting us down, Dr. Hall. Down, down, down!
Darn boy!
Well, I can't understand how you got this impression, Mr. Wellman. Grimes is a brilliant man, one of our most promising historians.
Well, then, let him keep his promises. Do you realize that Grimes has published nothing, not a single book or article since 1947? 5 years?
Well, is the value of the teacher to be measured by what he offers his pupils or his publishers?
May I remind you, Dr. Hall, that Grimes occupies the Hezekiah Q. Wellman Chair of Modern European History?
Well, the reminder is unnecessary. I know it very well.
And need I add that that chair was endowed by me in grateful memory of my late paternal grandfather, Hezekiah Q. Wellman? Grimes is in my chair. I mean, the one I...
Yes, I know that also.
Do you know Dr. Grimes personally, Mr. Wellman?
Well, I've shaken his hand, if that's what you mean. I know what he looks like. Doesn't mean anything. Anybody can look like anything. And they often do.
Are you sure you have adequate grounds for your complaint?
I know that he hasn't published anything since 1947. That's enough for me.
Well, wouldn't it be a good idea to get acquainted with him?
Yes. Now, why don't you both come over here tomorrow evening?
Won't do any good. A lot of happy chit-chat, la-di-da personalities, everybody being charming. Nobody's going to charm me into changing my mind. Maybe Grimes can hold a teacup, but that isn't the question. Can he hold his job?
Well, let's have you both here anyway. We'll all try our best not to be charming. It'll be difficult for my wife, I know, but I'm sure she'll do her best.
Well, I'll just pretend I'm the new girl in the play and you're all friends of the producers.
All right, I'll be here. But I warn you, I consider this a college, not a coffee clutch. And every time I've gone to a coffee clutch, I've always found one kind of cookie that I could do without.
It's good to see you, Dr. Grimes. Glad we were able to reach you. Do you know anything about steam fitting?
Well, only the old joke about taking two pieces of steam and screwing them together.
Or about boiler cleaning compounds?
No, sir. My horizons are somewhat limited.
Then you ought to be a college president. I was just on the telephone with the custodian of buildings. He wanted my advice on repairs to the heating system. Now, why should I know anything about that?
Well, I suppose the presidency of a college does demand a certain omniscience.
Omniscience, yes. It would tax the versatility of Leonardo, the wisdom of Solomon, the patience of... No, I mustn't be trite. I will not say Job. So now, let's get down to business. I had a special reason for wanting to see you this morning, Dr. Grimes. Not a very pleasant one, I'm afraid.
Really? I'm sorry to hear that.
Do you know Mr. Wellman, Clarence Wellman, the chairman of our Board of Governors?
Well, I've met him, of course.
Well, Mr. Wellman is a shrewd businessman, Professor. We mustn't for a minute discount either his sincerity or his intelligence. However, he is occasionally inclined not to list some of our intangibles as assets. Your ability to communicate with and inspire your students is, to me, a real value. But to Mr. Wellman, it is not something which can be displayed in the window.
It seems, Professor, that you have stubbornly and shamefully refused to publish a book in the last 5 years. That's the case for the prosecution. Wellman versus Grimes.
Ah, I see. And to keep my name on his books, he wants to see my name on my books.
Mr. Wellman has become obsessed with the idea that a top-notch scholar must be a productive scholar.
Well, of course, he's right up to a point. I haven't published anything recently. However, I suppose if the college insists, I could knock out a paper and send it off. Although right now, that would sidetrack me.
Oh, the college doesn't insist. I've heard nothing but favorable comments about your work here. You have the respect of colleagues and students alike.
Well, that's very gratifying, Dr. Hall. I thank you.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, with the job you're doing at Ivy, I wouldn't mind if you never published another word.
Dr. Grimes, I think my husband is getting ready to put up a fight for you.
No, not a fight, Vicky. I don't think that'll be necessary. No, I would rather bring Mr. Wellman around by persuasion.
Oh, so would I.
Now then, let's make some plans, then.
Now the plotting starts.
And are you free tonight? Could you come over here?
Oh, certainly. I'd be delighted to.
Good, good. Mr. Wellman has agreed to be here, too. I want you two to meet face to face. In the meantime, I have a Machiavellian suggestion.
You, a Machiavelli?
No, he'd be a Borgia for the sake of Ivy College.
Well, Clarence Wellman also happens to be interested in history, particularly his own. He has spent a great deal of time and effort clambering about among the branches of his family tree.
Mm. He doesn't know that if you climb high enough in your family tree, you'll probably find yourself out on a limb.
Yes, like the man who spent $10,000 in family research and then $20,000 to have it suppressed. Yeah. How far back did Mr. Wellman get?
Well, I don't know exactly, but it seems the most illustrious of his ancestors was a certain Sir Tobias Wellman. Born somewhere around 1665 and knighted during the reign of George I.
No, it was probably a dull afternoon and George was looking for excitement. Into each reign some life must fall, I always say.
Sir Tobias Wellman, that sounds familiar.
It does. Hmm.
A few years ago, Mr. Wellman deposited a copy of his genealogy in the college library. Oh, I'm sure the librarian could help you find it. Now, If you were to familiarize yourself...
You need go no further, Dr. Hall. I have some free time before my next class.
Now let it work. Mischief thou art afoot. Take thou what course thou wilt. Poor Mr. Wellman. What's he done to deserve such a combination against him?
Oh, he's only guilty, my darling, of what Paul Valery calls the folly of mistaking a paradox for a discovery, a metaphor for a proof, a torrent of verbiage for a spring of capital truths, and oneself for an oracle.
The Voice of America is bringing you this presentation of The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. As we return to the Halls of Ivy, it's the evening of the same day. In the Hall's living room are Dr. and Mrs. Hall and young Professor Grimes.
All this business about publication. If a professor is a good professor, isn't that enough? Why is he expected to keep writing books?
It's supposed to establish prestige in his field of work, Mrs. Hall. The authority of the printed word.
It's an ever-recurring problem, Victoria. Quite a familiar one to those of us in the teaching professions, but not to the laity.
That was no laity. That was your wife.
I can see now why you've cultivated the virtue of tolerance, Dr. Hall. Do you get much of this?
Oh, yes, yes, a great deal. Although my wife's theatrical references are usually more classical than that one.
Well, it just didn't seem to be the right spot for Shakespeare.
But tell me, Dr. Grimes, you said this morning that it would...
Oh, now, that must be Mr. Wellman now.
Ah, we must try not to greet him so frivolously tonight.
Yeah, last night we put on an impromptu scene from Macbeth.
Oh, not one of the murders, I hope.
Well, no, but sometimes I'm sorely tempted.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. Good evening, Dr. Hall.
And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Good evening to you, Mr. Wellman.
Had your doorbell fixed. Good evening, Mrs. Hall.
Yeah, a case of assault and battery. We found a battery on the bell, saved an assault on the door. Good evening, Mr. Wellman.
You know Dr. Grimes? Dr. Grimes, Mr. Wellman.
How do you do, sir?
Yes, I've met this young man. How do you do?
Now, please sit down, both of you. I've invited you here tonight because I believe you should know each other better. I was sure, Mr. Wellman...
Yes, yes, Dr. Hall, I know all that preamble, but Dr. Grimes, how much do you know about English history?
He teaches it, Mr. Wellman.
Yes, and I've done a good deal of research in it.
Have you ever heard of Sir Tobias Wellman?
Sir Tobias Wellman? Yes, I have.
You have? How did you happen to... I mean, hardly anybody ever... You're sure you mean Sir Tobias Wellman?
Yes, I do. He was born, as I remember, in November 1665.
November 17th. Fancy your knowing that. Don't meet many people these days who take an interest in real historical figures.
This is quite a coincidence, your knowing about it, Professor.
Oh, now, how can you say that, Victoria? History is Professor Grimes' specialty. It's no more surprising than to find Mr. Wellman, a former soup manufacturer, knowing how much actual gumbo goes into chicken gumbo.
Very silly. We don't put gumbo into chicken gumbo. Gumbo means soup.
Oh.
It's like saying, how much mock do you put into mock turtle?
Or how much mulliger in the tawny?
Certainly. Mulliger tawny is an East Indian soup. Word means pepper water, and with curry as the main ingredient, it's... But I don't want to talk about soup. I want to talk about Sir Tobias Wellman.
Well, as I recall, he learned the trade of carriage maker.
He did. He did indeed. That's the one, all right. Dr. Hall, this is the first historian I ever met.
And finally went into business for himself. And he's a forebear of yours, I take it,
the
sir.
The first of the Wellman line, Sir Tobias.
I believe he eventually became carriage maker to the king.
Exactly. He was carriage maker to King George I. He invented a new method of slinging the body of the carriage with leather loops, you know. Still known in trade circles as the Wellman Sling. Far more comfortable for the passengers.
Yes. It was in recognition of this contribution to the royal comfort that Tobias Wellman was knighted.
Exactly. Dr. Hall, why haven't I talked to this young man before?
Well, the opportunity has existed.
Incidentally, Mr. Wellman, I went to the library today and read that copy of your genealogy.
You did? Well, it's been there long enough. I'm glad somebody was finally interested enough to read it.
Why were you interested in it, Professor?
Excuse me while I get some butter.
Butter? Butter?
I just want to see if it'll melt in my husband's mouth.
Well, now, I don't believe that, really, now, there's such an experiment at this time of year. No. Go ahead, Professor.
Well, a few years ago, I was doing some research in the British Museum on the social history of the Restoration period.
I don't know why they call these high points of history periods. History flows. Its interludes might be called historical commas, perhaps, or at the most, semicolons. But I'm sorry. Go on, Professor.
Yes, go on.
Well, I was digging around in some old pamphlets, diaries, and letters, and so on. And this morning, the name of Sir Tobias Wellman had struck a chord in my memory. And so I spent most of this afternoon checking over my old notes. I'm sure this will interest you, Mr. Wellman.
This is better than a whodunit. But get to the part where Gorgeous George hit Tobias Wellman with a sword.
Now, there is reason to believe, sir, that the young Wainwright named Wellman, who married Polly Boggs, was not actually the father of Sir Tobias Wellman.
What do you mean, not actually the father? I mean, well, then who?
Polly Boggs was the daughter of an innkeeper near London. One stormy night in March 1665, this information is from an old letter, there was an unexpected guest, a royal guest, King Charles II.
Who wrote this, Daphne du Maurier?
Yes, I can see the cover on the jacket.
Now, it appears that young Polly Boggs, who at this time was about 18, caught the roving eye of the king. You all know the reputation of Charles II? Well, there appears to have been a romantic interlude. In any case, Mr. Wellman, a certain amount of conjecture is involved here. But it seems very probable that the father of Sir Tobias Wellman was none other than King Charles II himself.
No.
Really?
Well, you think? My goodness, that would... Really?
Mr. Wellman, you may very well have flowing in your veins the blood of royalty, the blood of the Stuarts.
But Wellman did marry her, didn't he? And of course, that was a very long time ago. Royalty! The blood of the Stuarts! Well, I can hardly believe it.
For a soup manufacturer, Mr. Wellman, you turned out to be quite a broth of a boy.
Again, let me say, Mr. Wellman, we cannot be absolutely sure.
But it could be true. It must be. It would explain so many things about me.
Yes. One of the Stuarts lost his head, didn't he?
Gloria.
Dr. Hall, my judgment was too hasty. A young man, you are the kind of faculty member we like to have at Ivy.
That's gratifying, sir.
Anybody who does such conscientious research, well, when your contract comes up for renewal... In spite of what Dr. Hall may advise, I want you to know I am behind you.
In spite of what I...
Yes, now I must go. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, Professor Grimes. Good evening, Mrs. Hall. Dr. Hall, yeah, this has been very interesting. The blood of the Stuarts, huh? From the line of kings. Huh? Imagine me, an economic royalist. Yeah, King Clarence I. Good night, subjects.
Good night. Good night, Your Majesty. Well, Professor, I hope that wasn't altogether a hoax.
Oh, it wasn't a hoax at all, sir. There is a certain amount of conjecture, as I pointed out, but
The probabilities are certainly in favor of it.
Well, it's amazing. Bonnie Prince Clarence.
Bless his wrinkled little kilt.
He went out in quite a glow of noble happiness, didn't he?
Yeah, I always rather suspected he came from royal stock. It explains why I've so often wanted to crown him.
That's Lay's Majesty, my darling. I shall expect you, as a former British subject, one subject I never wish to change, I shall expect you to treat His Majesty, Mr. Wellman, with a little more of the respect due the regal line. And as for me, I shall get myself some silk knee-breeches from board meetings.
All very well for you, Dr. Hall. You're of ambassadorial status. But what about me? I've just researched myself back into the peasantry.
It wasn't it wonderful to watch Mr. Wellman's face when he suddenly realized who he might be? I'll bet he goes home and beats his soup kettles into a suit of armor.
I hope he can make the feeling last.
Oh, he will. According to one of his brother rulers, Richard II, not all the water in the rough, rude sea can wash the balm from an anointed king.
We'll be seeing you next week at this same time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Oh, we love that surround us here today.
The Halls of Ivy on Tuned to Yesterday from April 2nd, 1952 on NBC. Bringing to a close this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. It's been a pleasure.